In a black and white logo, electric bolts shoot out of a radio transmitter sitting atop the revolving Earth. Words appear in sync with the beeping signal, an RKO radio picture. Now, a black and white film. An imposing stone-carved monument honors Queen Victoria on her royal throne with an inscription, Victoria Regina Imperatrix.
Now in India's sunny clime, where I used to spend my time, a servant of Her Majesty the Queen, of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was our regimental bestie.
Titles appear on the surface of a giant gong. RKO Radio Pictures presents Gunga Din, starring Cary Grant as Cutter, Victor McLaughlin as McChesney, and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. as Ballantyne. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH, Boston. Described by Michael Braden. Read by Rena Baskin. Funded by the United States Department of Education. As a man strikes the huge gong with a mallet, its surface ripples like water and more titles appear. With Sam Jaffe, Eduardo Cianelli, Joan Fontaine, Montague Love, Robert Coote, and Abner Bieberman. In charge of production, Pandro S. Berman. Screenplay by Joel Sayre and Fred Guiol. Story by Ben Hecht and Charles MacArthur. From Rudyard Kipling's poem, Gunga Din. Music by Alfred Newman. Technical advisors, Sir Robert Erskine Holland, Captain Clive Morgan, and Sergeant Major William Bryars. Photographed by Joseph H. August, ASC. Art director, Van Nest Poglossi. Special effects by Vernon L. Walker, ASC. Edited by Henry Berman and John Lockhart. Assistant directors, Edward Kelly and Dewey Starkey. Copyright 1939. Produced and directed by George Stevens. A note, those portions of this picture dealing with the worship of the goddess Kali are based on historic fact. Now, a sharp-beaked vulture sits atop a telegraph pole. A pickaxe topped with a third, pike-like point shoves the bird away. A shirtless, dark-skinned man pulls himself to the top crosspiece and starts bashing the wire connector with the pickaxe. Meanwhile, a column of British soldiers on horseback advances through rocky desert country. With pennant flags flying, the eight horsemen pass under the telegraph line. Far ahead, several dark-skinned men dig a trench near the pole where the saboteur works. Another rides up. The men scramble out of the trench. Later, they wait behind a pile of broad boulders. White cloths wrap their heads and keep their dark faces in shadow. The mounted British soldiers approach at a gentle trot. As they round the bend, the saboteur steps out to greet them.
Detail! Halt!
Salam, monsieur.
He bows low.
Rasta men behut chorm han. Kuch rasta taku fasta for men.
What was that all about?
They're pilgrims, sahib, going home to the hills. They beg to follow us for safety.
The white-robed nomads gaze up at the commander.
Tell them not to fall too far behind.
Bahut acha, tum hamare saath aa sakte ho, lekin bahut dur nahi rehna.
Shukriya, shukriya.
The tail walk, march!
The commander and his turbaned, uniformed Indian patrol continue on their way.
Well, Jadu, sun is going down. Expect we better beatwhack an elephant rock, as usual.
Yes, Markham Sahib.
The dozen nomads carry walking sticks as they follow the slow procession. Late that night at camp, the horses stand in a row, tethered to a long rope. Nearby, the leader of the white-robed nomads grins evilly as he and the others sneak up to the patrol soldiers who sleep restlessly by a campfire. Two of the nomads grab the lone watchman from behind and strangle him with a white cloth. The others quickly descend upon the sleeping soldiers, strangling them with cloth rags. The frightened horses tug at their tethers. Daytime. Over a view of a military parade field, a title reads, The British Army Post at Muri.
I don't like it, Mitchell. I don't like it. Silence is unhealthy. No word from Markham in 48 hours. Blast it, an officer and his patrol don't vanish into thin air.
A soldier enters.
Telegraph just got through, sir.
Good.
The two officers don their pith helmets and stride out of the building. Followed by another officer, they march stiffly to another stucco-walled building. Inside, a uniformed telegraph operator sits at a teletype machine. He taps a lever. In the busy village of Tantrapur, 15 miles to the north, another operator taps his machine. Now, back at Muri.
What have you got?
Wires, apparently, down for the last 2 days.
I thought it was something like that.
In Tantrapur, the operator slowly looks up to find the white-robed saboteur with two others all staring menacingly. The operator in Muri listens intently.
Emergency signal, sir.
Why doesn't he go on?
The Muri operator taps a reply.
Wire's gone dead, sir.
I don't like this.
The operator tries again. Now, dozens of bandits on horseback invade Tantrapur's main street, firing their rifles as they chase panicked villagers. Indian men and women flee with their children from the hounding pursuers. As the dust clears from the street, the white stucco houses stand deserted. Meanwhile, in Muri.
We can't have the wires down. Things start too quickly up there.
The colonel steps outside.
Higginbottom.
An officer gives a vigorous salute.
Sir.
Find Sergeants McChesney, Cutter, and Ballantyne. Bring them here at once.
Well, it's a bit difficult, sir, seeing as how they've all gone on leave together. Gone on some mysterious mission, they said, sir. Says I, it'll be a mystery if you ever come back the right side up, I said, sir.
Bring them here at once.
Higginbottom salutes again and marches smartly off. Later, he and his MPs come upon a chaotic street scene. A man falls out a window. The man who pushed him looks out.
What do you want? Where's Sergeant Ballantyne?
Another does the same in the next window.
Here! Where's Sergeant Cutter?
They glance back inside, where a third man fights several Scottish soldiers.
He's busy.
Higginbottom nods uncertainly. Ballantyne and McChesney turn from the windows and watch Cutter fight.
Buying a map for a buried treasure. You ought to have your head examined.
How's I know that? Swindle.
Ah, you and your emeralds. You ought to be putting up a bad cell.
One punch sends four Scots tumbling.
We could have farmed them emeralds. We could have left the army and lived like dukes. See?
The remaining Scotsman breaks a chair over Cutter's head. Cutter looks up with a slow grin and points playfully.
That's a fellow that sold me the map. Oh, just a minute. Let me take care of it, will you?
Grinning, he lands a vicious blow to the man's chin, then dangles him out the window.
Hey, take your hands off that man.
Cutter lets go. The Scotsman tumbles out the second-story window. Cutter shrugs at Higginbottom, who huffs. Later, the three sergeants stand at attention before the colonel.
Well, I'm waiting for an explanation. Speak up, McChesney.
Well,
speak up!
We were swindled, sir.
Ballantyne and McChesney gape at each other.
We?
Who swindled you?
Well, we don't want to make any charges until we have further proof, sir.
Further proof? Well, you practically wrecked a village. You surely didn't do that, McChesney, without proof.
Well, sir, we had our suspicions.
Suspicions of what? Come on, I've no time to wheedle the story out of you.
Well, sir,
we bought a map.
One?
From a private in a certain Scottish regiment, sir.
No, I did it. I bought the map myself, sir.
Cutter's buddies glance at him.
Now, listen. Don't you try to shield your friends, Cutter. And it won't do you two any good to hide yourselves behind Sergeant Cutter's generosity. Now, come on out with it. A map of what?
Well, of like Singale, sir.
Yes, sir. And the privilege of diving into it to our arch content.
Diving for what?
For emerald, sir.
A barge full, sir. According to the information I bought, it was sunk in the year 241.
I can hardly believe it. Ballantyne, a man of your intelligence. McChesney, at your age.
They was the spoils of a Maharaja, sir.
Thank you, Cutter. That will be sufficient. As for you two, I ought to take away your stripes, not only for insubordination, but for idiocy. Sheer, childish, soft-brained idiocy.
Cutter smiles to himself.
But fortunately for you, I need all three of you at Tantripple.
Are we going out on a job, sir?
Of the most vital importance. You leave for Tantripple with a detachment in the morning to repair the telegraph and keep it open. That's all.
Left hand! Left wheel! Quick march!
Sergeant Higginbottom marches the three men out the door.
Left wheel! Up time in front!
Later, the three mounted sergeants lead a detachment of about 30 Indian foot soldiers. The 40-ish barrel-chested McChesney rides front center, flanked by the younger sergeants Cutter and Ballantyne. The horse-drawn supply cart brings up the rear. Behind the cart come several dark-skinned Indian servants, wearing only loincloths and turbans. Three of them lug large pouches of water on shoulder straps. They hunch under the weight. The last man follows a few yards behind as the procession heads across the rocky desert toward a mountain range. Later, the British detachment advances along a narrow path through jagged rock foothills. The three sergeants wear trim, light-colored military uniforms, close-fitting pith helmets, and long black riding boots. Still later, the detachment reaches a village nestled below a steep cliff. Tantrapur's simple white dwellings are dwarfed by the sun-bleached, scree-covered cliff faces around them. A row of telegraph poles leads up to the broad, U-shaped main street. The small, boxy houses edging the street stand right on the dirt ground with flimsy awnings. Sergeant McChesney leads his marching soldiers into the village past an abandoned horse cart. He spots a large vulture atop a two-story stucco house. It flies away. McChesney gazes around, square-jawed, with a wide nose and pencil-thin mustache. Sergeant Cutter, clean-shaven, with a striking cleft chin, surveys the dusty street, as does the lean, thin-mustached Ballantyne. McChesney stops at an octagonal, domed building.
Party! Halt! Sergeant, dismount!
Indian servants run up to take the sergeant's horses as the three Englishmen cautiously enter the small one-story building. In the front room, white latticework covers the large windows. A wooden desk sits in the middle of the room. McChesney steps past the desk to an inner door. He opens it. The room is deserted. A square table sits in the center. On the tablecloth is a hearty dinner for two, barely touched. McChesney picks up a ceramic pot of tea and glances inside.
Cold.
Ballantyne takes a bread roll and taps it on the table.
Stale.
In the front room, Cutter finds a wall map of India with a three-pronged pickaxe embedded in the northeast part of the country. He yanks out the axe and studies it curiously, then joins McChesney and Ballantyne outside.
I don't mind saying that the whole thing fair gives me the creeps.
Well, creeps or no creeps, we've got to get in touch with the colonel.
Well, we can't get in touch with him until we get them poles up and this wire's strung.
Yeah. Nike! Detail 10 men for guard duty. The remainder will pile our arms and prepare for work.
Look inside.
Don't hide me! Quick! Ah!
A detail of 10 soldiers marches forward several steps.
Fuck it! Ah!
The rest of the soldiers run back to the horse-drawn supply cart and climb on. Later, at the edge of town, the Indian soldiers work bare-chested under a blazing sun, repairing the damaged telegraph poles.
Hey, Ganga Deen! Itadav!
Soldiers beckon Ganga one of the water carriers.
Ganga Deen! Water!
Ganga Deen! Bring water! Bring water!
The lanky Ganga Deen hurries over, lugging a full satchel of water. The soldiers kneel under the spout, and Ganga Deen pours water into their cupped hands. Now, Cutter reports to Sergeant McChesney.
Well, whoever's been playing tricks with this village is blinking clever.
I couldn't find a trail or a single footprint leading in or out.
Ballantyne explores the main street. The slender, sharp-nosed sergeant squints alertly under his furrowed brow. The closely packed, flat-roofed houses have dark doorways and small windows set several inches into the white stucco walls. On a rooftop behind Ballantyne, a white-turbaned Indian sneaks to the edge and spies down. When Ballantyne turns toward the rooftop, he sees only one of his Indian soldiers standing guard. Ballantyne turns away. On the rooftop, the Indian spy attacks the guard from behind and strangles him with a cloth. Unaware, Ballantyne wanders through a shadowy alley between two tall buildings. A wooden ladder runs up one wall. Ballantyne casually twirls around as he looks up. Moving behind the row of houses, he glances around. A man ducks quickly out of sight. Ballantyne doesn't notice, but surveys the area through narrowed, suspicious eyes. Meanwhile, as Cutter squints into the late afternoon sun, a guard on a rocky ridge behind him gets strangled. Now, Ballantyne approaches a house at the edge of a drop-off. Inside, several Indian men huddle secretively.
Chukraho!
The saboteur leader gestures with a three-pronged pickaxe, then goes into the front room alone as Ballantyne enters. A short Indian wears a white cloth wrap. Ballantyne eyes him.
The village isn't quite deserted, eh?
Salam, Sai.
How are you? What are you doing here?
My name is Pandrulal. I'm a miserable seller of trinkets. Last night, a band of dacoits raided this village, looted my shop, and stole off with my poor wife and six children.
Outside, Sergeant Cutter patrols the main street. Behind him, a black-turbaned head peeks over a low wall. As Cutter turns, the man ducks out of sight. Cutter's dark, piercing eyes squint. Now, McChesney follows. In the house, Ballantyne strides suspiciously into the back room, where he finds the other Indian bandits pretending to sleep.
Well, the children are looking bonny.
One burly, bearded man glares at him.
Come on your feet, everybody, in the other room. Come on, get up. On the double.
They slowly get up and shuffle past Ballantyne to the front room.
Come on, get in there. Quick!
One man stays behind, hiding around a corner.
Go on. Ah, that's better.
Leaning casually in the doorway, Ballantyne notices the leader's bag. He kicks it.
What's that?
Trinkets, Sai. Only what I could save from my pitiful stock. Worth hardly a few annas.
Go on, open them up. Go on, open them!
The man squats and opens the bag on the floor. As Ballantyne kneels to look, the hidden bandit sneaks up behind him, holding a twisted cloth between his hands. He wraps it around Ballantyne's neck. Ballantyne flips the man over his head, gets up, and starts fighting the others. Outside, Cutter hears the scuffle and comes to investigate. In the doorway, he watches Ballantyne struggle with three men. Cutter shakes his head in mock distaste, then steps forward and calmly levels one of the Indians with a punch to the jaw. He socks another, then drags a third to the floor. Now McChesney shows up. Two men charge him. He knocks them both away. One Indian bandit jumps through the boarded-up window. The saboteur leader sprints for the door, but McChesney grabs him by the wrist.
Who are these playful subjects here?
I don't know, but young Toadface you've got there seems to be the leader.
Oh. Well, get them all out of here.
All right, come on, get out of here. On your feet. Come on.
The sergeants herd their six captives outside.
All right, hold them there. Nike, detail eight men for an escort duty. Bring me on the double.
He glares at the leader.
Listen, you. What became of Burgess, Sahib, eh? Come on, spit it out.
He can speak, but he won't. Suno, Burgess, Sahib, Kirigia.
Uji Malumbi.
He doesn't know.
Cutter brings forward the pickaxe.
You never saw one of these things before, did you? For growing daisies, isn't it?
Ah, Sai.
Or for planting lilies for people's graves.
Ah, Sai.
No, Sai.
Cutter threatens him with the axe point.
And what became of these people here, huh?
Come look, get the gear.
Udamano.
He doesn't know.
Oh, that's good.
We'll take them back with us and let the colonel put them through the mangle.
The leader shakes his head.
No, we will not go with the white side.
He raises his arms high.
Kali! Kali!
He gazes fiercely.
You will never leave here. Already your graves are dug. By nightfall, Ma Kali will be smiling.
He touches the elephant pendant around his neck. Valentine smirks.
Kali! Kali!
Cutter's and Valentine's eyes shift nervously.
Kali!
All right, never mind the second chorus. Come on!
Kali!
On a nearby rooftop, a bandit aims his rifle. An Indian soldier clutches his leg and collapses to the ground. The prisoners swarm around the sergeants.
Howdy, form a square!
The bandit leader lunges for the pickaxe Cutter holds. Cutter knocks him away and hurls the axe at him. He catches it. He charges Cutter, but the sergeant flattens him with an uppercut and takes back the axe. Cutter draws his pistol and shoots one of the rooftop snipers. Now Valentine punches one bandit, then holds the bandit's robe while he socks another. Flipping the first man over his shoulder, he dumps him onto the other man. They collapse in a heap. Valentine and Cutter shoot at other snipers who tumble head over heels from the roofs. One sniper hits a worker atop a telegraph pole. The man winces and falls 20 feet to the ground. Now dozens of white-turbaned horsemen appear from the mountains, kicking up dust as they ride into town, guns and swords brandished. As the telegraph workers cling to their perches, the soldiers flee from the oncoming marauders. Carrying their rucksacks and rifles, the troops hastily take cover among the rows of houses and return fire. McChesney and Cutter shoot down two of the charging horsemen. The other mounted attackers sweep into the dust-filled streets. McChesney waves to his men. Sergeants and their troops hurry into a small walled-in courtyard and bar shut the wooden double gate. An enemy bandit lurks behind a corner.
Around the wall, everybody! Around the wall! Come on, men! Under roof!
As the troops boost each other up the 15-foot-high wall to the roof, a soldier rides up with the horse-drawn equipment cart. Just inside the gate, Valentine holsters his gun. A bullet hits the wall nearby. He smiles, impressed. Cutter and McChesney boost him up to the roof, where he joins the soldiers and shoots a marauder on the next roof. Cutter climbs the wall, then McChesney. The bandit who was hiding aims his rifle, but Valentine shoots him. The water carrier, Gunga Din, kneels over the fallen man. Smiling, he gives him a drink. As gunfire fills the air, Valentine leaps from the roof onto the equipment cart below. He shoots the lock off a storage box, splintering the wood. Inside, he finds sticks of dynamite. He throws one in an easy arc up to Cutter on the roof. He lobs another. Cutter slides them into his chest pocket. Meanwhile, the enemy Indians use ladders to climb the surrounding rooftops. Valentine tosses a fifth dynamite stick to Cutter, who nervously bobbles it in the air, then safely grabs it.
Valentine, come on!
As his fellow men shoot at their attackers, Valentine jumps onto a gatepost and back up to the roof. Cutter lights a stick of dynamite and hurls it across toward the bandits on a neighboring rooftop. As Valentine leads a follow-up charge, Cutter throws another stick at a group of bandits on the ground. They scurry away. It blows a hole in a building. He tosses another at a crowded enemy rooftop. Ladders and men go flying. Cutter throws the fourth in front of a group of horsemen. The horses recoil and the Indians hurriedly retreat. Now, McChesney's men advance in force across the roof toward the enemy. Crouching behind a low wall, they fire their rifles. Cutter tosses Valentine a saber sword, and the three sergeants lead a bold charge. Cutter dashes forward with a cigarette in his mouth and the pickaxe in his hand, across the low dividing walls. The bandits flee, and he and McChesney give chase. On a wide roof, they challenge several lunging bandits, expertly flipping two of them. McChesney swings from an overhead beam and kicks two others in their chests. They tumble backward off the roof. On another roof, Ballantyne sword fights a tall, bearded Indian. He picks up a rifle with his free hand and bashes a second attacker who falls off the roof. Three others suddenly climb up and Ballantyne fights them all. Shoving them away, he turns and leaps across a wide gap to the next roof. His left leg plunges through the rooftop. He's stuck. Meanwhile, the others fight their way to another low wall and shelter behind it, shooting desperately. Cutter lights his last stick of dynamite and tosses it over. The bandits scurry away. It lands near the trapped Ballantyne. Cutter gapes. Dashing forward, he leaps at the sputtering dynamite and knocks it away down a flight of stairs. Indian enemies coming up the stairs turn and flee. On the roof, Cutter and McChesney help Ballantyne up. Below them, a bandit gets the dynamite and winds up to throw it back. McChesney shoots him.
Get behind the wall! Come on! Hurry up!
The trio hastily returns to their hideout. Gunga Din appears.
Honey? Sergeant Sahib?
Now! Hey, how did you get here? You're a funny bloke, Dean. But I'll admit you're a good beastie.
Could be first-class soldier, Sahib.
Oh, don't make me laugh!
Now, two marauders climb a 40-foot ladder to the roof. Cutter punches one and pushes the ladder top away. The grasping Indian pulls off Cutter's sleeve, but the ladder tilts away and falls.
Hey! Get to the river! Get to the river!
McChesney waves to his soldiers on the ground. They retreat down a flight of steps to a river's edge where they crowd into a few wooden boats. On the high roof, Cutter looks over the edge and gapes. It's a 100-foot cliff drop to the water. As the marauders charge, McChesney urges a soldier.
Over you go!
Over you go!
The soldier jumps.
Over you go!
McChesney grabs his broken sword back from Gunga Din, who jumps off. The three sergeants quickly follow. McChesney fires his last shots as he rolls off the edge. Plummeting 100 feet, the three friends hit the water with a tremendous splash. Later, the tattered company heads back toward camp. Wounded men limp slowly, their downcast faces grim. Gunga Din and another man support a third between them. Up front, the three sergeants trudge side by side.
What's the matter, Bell? You've been wool gathering ever since we crawled out of the river.
Well, you know, my time is up on May the 14th.
Yeah. Well, what of that? You wouldn't sign on for another 9 years, can't you? Make a man out of him, huh?
I'm leaving the service.
Leaving the service?
That's right. I'm getting married and I'm going in the tea business.
Married?
Tea business?
Why, you're mad if it... March to attention, everybody! Let's march in good style, men!
The men line up.
Left, right, left.
McChesney leads his men, numbering about 20, in a brisk march through a gate onto the Moree military parade ground. A Scottish guard stands at attention. Hundreds of Scottish soldiers wearing kilts line one side of the parade ground next to dozens of mounted Indian soldiers holding standards with dual-colored pennants. The returning company passes a band of Scottish bagpipers and drummers. Colonel Weed and a major watch from their horses.
Tell the sergeant to report at the office immediately.
Yes, sir.
The major rides toward the men as McChesney marches them into position near a central British flagpole. In two rows, they make a curving right turn. Stopping, they face left in a crisply unison turn.
Sergeant to the front!
McChesney meets the waiting officer with a smart salute.
I beg to report, sir, the Warren party has returned from Tantfall. 8 killed, 3 wounded. Otherwise, all correct.
Very well, Sergeant. Dismiss your men and report at the office immediately.
Very good, sir.
McChesney turns to face his men.
Hurry! Dismiss!
With a stiff right face, the men break rank. Later, in the colonel's office, the three sergeants show him the recovered pickaxe with its curved blade and top spike. The colonel takes it over to a wall display of ancient weapons where spears and swords are mounted next to early guns and another three-pronged pickaxe. The colonel compares the two.
Identical, Mitchell.
Good heavens, a tug pickaxe.
That's incredible. That's what happened to Markham. I'm afraid they've done away with poor Burgess, too.
There's been none of this for 50 years.
Dougie. That's what it is, Mitchell.
What's Dougie, sir?
A murder cult. Colonel Sleeman crushed 50 years ago.
The Tugs were the most fiendish band of killers that ever existed.
There were at least 10,000 of them in India, and they murdered 30,000 people a year. Tuggie was practiced from the Himalayas to Ceylon. The order was religious and worshipped Kali, the goddess of blood.
The Tugs were stranglers, weren't they, sir?
Stranglers? They dug the graves of their victims in advance. Mitchell, we must stamp this out immediately. The Lancers will scour the country west of Tanjore. You will search the regions to the east.
Right.
What do we do, sir?
You're dismissed, Ballantyne. McChesney, you and Cutter will leave tomorrow with a stronger... Ballantyne, you're dismissed.
Ballantyne salutes, his brow furrowed, and turns away.
McChesney, you and Cutter will take a stronger detachment tomorrow to Tanjore to finish your work. Major Mitchell and I will be in close touch with you at all times, on either flank. Keep your eyes open for Tugs.
Cutter and McChesney watch as Ballantyne reluctantly leaves.
Well, Ballantyne will be a great help, sir. If I may remind you, sir, the three of us have always brought off things very well together.
Why, yes, sir. He's indispensable, sir.
Ballantyne's leaving the service in 6 days. He's getting married.
McChesney rolls his eyes.
Well, look, sir, couldn't you put your foot down or something, you know, forbid the bans, something like that?
Yes, sir. When a parson says, speak now or forever hold your peace, can't you give him a roar, sir? You know what I mean.
Higginbottom will replace him.
Higginbottom.
Dismiss.
They salute stiffly. Outside, Ballantyne holds his fiancée in his arms.
Tommy, I've got you back again.
Yes, I've got you. I'm here to stay with you forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
She smiles radiantly, her long-lashed eyes shining.
Oh, that's horrible. She's charmed him like a snake.
Cyrene.
While they watch, Ballantyne and his fiancée share a tender kiss.
I wouldn't believe this if I didn't see it with my own eyes, you know?
Me neither.
Ballantyne notices them and leads her away with a smirk.
I can't stand it.
McChesney walks away.
Me too.
On the parade ground, hundreds of soldiers in columns drill, swinging their pennant poles. Behind a building next to the field, Gunga Din follows the drill leader's commands. Instead of a pennant, he holds a bugle. Wearing a loincloth and turban, the long-nosed Indian looks down at his thin legs as he practices march steps and turns. His narrow chin presses against his out-thrust chest. Sergeant Cutter rounds a corner and stops to watch. Dean notices him and freezes. Staring nervously through wide eyes, Dean hides the bugle behind him and takes a few steps back. Cutter, in his sergeant's uniform and pith helmet, strolls up to the wary Dean.
Company. Attention!
Dean drops the bugle, then starts to smile.
Attention!
He snaps to attention.
Right turn!
Elbows out and back, he pivots.
2 paces forward, march!
Dean takes 2 confident steps and stands eagerly at attention while the grim-faced Cutter, holding a riding crop, inspects his form.
Head up, chin in. Get those thumbs behind the seam of your trousers. Get them back.
Dean tucks his hands behind his loincloth.
Oh, that left shoulder, 1/8 of an inch.
He drops his shoulder.
That's much better. Otherwise, you're looking very regimental, Dean.
Dean gives a grinning salute.
Thank you, Sergeant. Thank you. Was salute satisfactory?
That's the idea. You want these fingers to fan the eyebrows, more like this.
A slicing open palm salute.
The breeze from them fingers ought to almost blow this eyebrow off. Now try it again.
Dean does a sharp, jerky salute. Cutter winces.
Very good indeed. Yeah, that one almost blew your turban off, didn't it? Oh, very regimental, Dean.
Keep them at it, Subedar Sahib. They may need it.
Achha, Colonel Sahib.
Tell the Subedar to drill the men till sundown.
Let's get the bugle, Dean.
Please, Sahib, I find when nobody looking.
Don't you know that's very naughty?
Please, Sahib, don't take away. Bugle only pleasure for poor beastie.
Cutter looks away from Dean's imploring gaze. Chewing his lip, Cutter glances around, smirks, and quickly hands the bugle over. Dean smiles brightly.
Thank you, Sahib. Thank you. Sahib, can't they hear you call?
Well, not now.
Cutter gazes out at the parade ground. He faces Dean again.
Now, very regimental, Dean. Company, attention.
Dean straightens.
Company, dismiss!
On the parade ground, all the soldiers stop drilling and break rank. Cutter makes a swift getaway around the back of the building. Now, in a straw-bedded stable, Sergeant McChesney tends to one of several 9-foot-tall elephants.
Let me see your tongue, Annie.
The wrinkled elephant obediently curls up her long trunk. McChesney peers at the broad, thick tongue. He shakes his head worriedly. An Indian soldier, dark-skinned with a mustache and turban, reaches for something on a shelf. McChesney holds the back of his hand against Annie's forehead, then feels his own forehead. The Indian soldier watches him.
I'd like to try it, Sergeant Sahib. Very old Indian remedy.
He pulls a small bottle off the shelf. McChesney takes it, looks at the label, and gives the man a hesitant glance.
All right. Go ahead. But be careful now. If anything happens to her, I'll... Understand? Cry my eyes out.
He pours the liquid into a large spoon.
No, Sahib. Very little bit goes very long way.
The man lets most of it spill out. McChesney grimaces at the smell as the soldier holds the spoon in front of Annie.
Gulp it down. Quick. Go on, then you won't taste it.
Annie backs away.
Oh, I know. You want your daddy to give it to you, don't you? Well, daddy will give you the medicine, yeah.
Sergeant Cutter passes by and stops to watch.
There. Be a nice girl now. Now you'll never grow up to be strong and big like daddy.
Now, if daddy took a spoonful first himself, baby might do a patty cake for him.
McChesney nods thoughtfully and pretends to drink.
Oh, this is delicious. Oh, yum, 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 yum. Oh, this is... All for a nice little elephant girl. Oh, this is lovely.
Annie lifts her trunk. Her mouth opens, framed by two short tusk stumps. McChesney gives her the medicine, tapping the spoon on her broad tongue. He sends Cutter a grudging nod.
You ain't so stupid as you look.
Annie sinks heavily to the floor and rolls onto her side. The Indian nervously bolts from the stable. McChesney turns to Annie.
Ooh!
He gapes at Cutter, who looks away. Annie sits back up and blinks her small eyes.
Oh, that's better. Annie, don't ever worry me like that again.
Oh, there you are, you two. I've got letters for both of you. Sergeant McChesney and Sergeant Archibald Cutter.
Cutter glares at Higginbottom and opens his envelope.
Look what he says here, will he? Miss Emmeline Stebbins requests the pleasure of Sergeant Archibald Cutter's company at a... What's a... betrothal dance preceding her marriage to Sergeant Thomas Bellantyne. That's fine, look at that. 8 p.m. Friday. Yeah, that's tonight.
That night, in a spacious villa, British officers and ladies waltz to phonograph music. Cutter and McChesney appear in finely braided military dress uniforms and tilted pillbox caps. Peeking in from a veranda, they see the thin mustached Ballantyne dancing happily with his beautiful bride to be. Ballantyne secretively leads Emmy out onto the veranda. His pals quickly hide behind a tall potted plant. Cutter winces as they spy on the couple.
I worried so about you, dear, while you were away. Perfectly awful things must have happened at Tanforpur.
Well, was rather touch and go there for a bit.
You haven't told me yet about it yourself.
No, I haven't, have I? Well, I had to give my undivided attention to the repairing of the wires. Cutter and McChesney should have watched out for the enemy, but they were off chasing butterflies or something like that. I finally got to the detachment of the river and we dived in and escaped.
Oh, Tommy, you're so marvelous.
The curly-haired Emmy beams at him. He grins casually.
That's all there is to it, I suppose. Oh, yes. On the last roof, we almost lost McChesney. His great elephant hoof crashed through and stuck.
How did you get him out?
We had to saw his leg off at the hip. And if you don't believe me, just look behind that shrub.
He points out the eavesdroppers. Cutter looks away, embarrassed. Ballantyne nods smugly at his friends as he and Emmy return to the ball. Now, Cutter brings out the bottle of elephant medicine. McChesney nods approvingly, and the two head inside to a refreshment table. At the table, an Indian waiter arranges one of the trays of food next to a crystal punch bowl. Cutter and McChesney stand idly by, pretending to look around, until the turbaned waiter moves off with his tray. Cutter strolls with exaggerated nonchalance around to the front of the table. He faces the main room, hands behind his back, so his body hides the punch bowl from view. Cutter gazes innocently around the room, a boyish smile disarming his handsome, lean face. McChesney grimaces.
Hey, save some for the elephant.
A look of concentration creases Cutter's face. His arms jiggle as he shakes the last of the bottle out. McChesney leans close, his eyes scanning the room.
Destroy the evidence.
Stand guard, will you?
Yeah.
Hiding the bottle behind his back, Cutter moseys toward a row of potted plants. Behind McChesney, Colonel Weed and Major Mitchell enter from the veranda. They wear cropped white coatees and black dress pants. McChesney snaps to attention.
Never mind that, Sergeant. Stand easy.
McChesney nervously sidles over to the refreshment table and stands in front of the punch bowl. The host greets the newly arrived officers.
Good evening, Colonel.
Evening, Stebbins.
Good evening, Major. How are you?
They shake hands.
Oh, no fault. See, we just dropped in to wish little Emmy the best of luck.
That's very nice of you, sir. I'll bring Emmy to you, sir.
The short, portly man bustles off. The Colonel puffs on a cigar.
Looks like a jolly party, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Very jolly, sir.
Mitchell spots the refreshments.
Is that a punch bowl you're shutting out?
Huh?
Is that punch?
McChesney turns and looks dolefully at the punch.
Some people call it a punch, sir, but I calls it swill, sir.
Nonsense. Stebbins is famous for his punch. Have a spot, Mitchell.
Rather.
McChesney squirms as the colonel starts to ladle out a drink.
Excuse me, sir. I wouldn't touch it if I was you, sir. Too watery, sir. Besides, it'll rust in the lining of your stomach.
We'll be the judge of that.
Wait a minute, sir, there's a fly.
A fly?
I don't see a fly.
Neither do I.
Yeah, there it is, sir. There it goes. It just dove under the ice. I'll get the little nipper in half a jiffy.
Pushing up his sleeves, he dunks both hands into the punch and starts rummaging around. The baffled officers look on.
Got it.
Slowly he brings his hands out, his right one curled in a fist. He shows it to them.
Hear him? Hear him? I mean like a beehive.
The officers stare at his hand, then at him as he uncurls his fingers ever so slowly, revealing his empty palm. He pretends to watch it fly away.
Ain't that a shame? There he goes.
The confused officers follow McChesney's drifting gaze. He shakes his head sadly. The colonel frowns and glances at the punch bowl.
Come along, Mitchell. I think we'll forget the punch.
Now, Sergeant Higginbottom stands stiffly at parade rest as Ballantyne and Emmy waltz past.
Oh, Tommy! You know, we have Sergeant Higginbottom to thank for your being got out of the expedition.
That's right, that's right. The colonel says I'm the only man sharp enough to replace Sergeant Ballantyne.
Oh, that's very flattering.
Oh, all right. I'm glad to be of some help in, Cupid's service. The one thing I can promise you with Cutter and McChesney about, you won't have one dull moment. I've got a feeling they don't like me very much. Well, it's just as well. The army's no place for sentiment, I says.
That's right.
Cutter, dancing nearby, overhears and stops.
Excuse me, I got a pebble in me left boot.
He leaves his partner.
Yeah, hello, Higginbottom. Oh. How'd you like to come with me, eh?
What?
Yeah. I'd like to discuss a few of my military theories with you.
Oh, well, I'd like to have a little chat. Get to know each other better, so to speak.
How about stepping in here for a bit of a drink, eh, Bert?
Oh, well, I wouldn't mind a step. Thanks, guys.
Yes,
at the refreshment table.
Hey, where's Ballantyne?
Never mind that civilian. I got Bertie Higginbottom, his replacement.
Cutter raises his eyebrows. McChesney suppresses a smile.
Mac, Bertie has got a thirst just like a derby winner, haven't you, Bertie?
Oh, we can look after that, Bert, old boy. Hey, take a plunge into this here punch.
Punch? Oh, I thought you had a blooming drink. That's just for drummer boys, no lady.
Oh, no, not that stuff, Bertie. Oh. That would knock an horse down, that would.
Swill it down, you Bertie, me boy. And you think all the thugs in India is a bunch of missionaries.
Yeah.
That's right, Bert.
The sergeant takes a sip under his full mustache, blinks his eyes, and takes another sip.
It's a funny thing. That punch tastes all right.
He drinks more.
It's all right.
Cutter frowns as Higginbottom drains his cup.
Well, how about having another drink, eh? Have a drink to the new comradeship, you know, Mank and you and me and the regiment forever. That's the stuff.
That's it, that's it, Bertie, my boy.
That's a very good idea.
I'll drink to that, mate.
All three men dip their cups into the punch.
Yeah. That's here's right. A good old Bertie Higginbottom.
That's right.
The finest soldier since William the Roman Conqueror.
Mac claps him on the back, spilling some of his punch.
Well, down the edge, boys.
As Higginbottom gulps his drink, Mac and Cutter put theirs down and stare at him. Setting down his empty cup, he smiles contentedly. Suddenly, his cheeks fill up. Clutching his stomach, he doubles over. Mac and Cutter haul him out to the veranda. Cutter returns, plunking a large flower and its potted soil into the bowl of punch. He and the nearby Indian waiter watch as the many-blossomed flower droops on its long stalk. Cutter stares in amazement and slips away. The next day, in a town fabric shop, Emmy drapes two different curtains over Ballantyne's outstretched arms. Outside, Mac and Cutter stop to watch through a window.
Which of these two do you prefer?
Oh, I don't know. Try them both. One for each window.
Don't be silly, darling. It's as much your problem as it is mine.
Yeah, I know.
These curtains are for your den, you know.
My den?
His grin fades into a pensive frown. He tries a half-hearted smile, then turns with furrowed brow to the window where Cutter and Mac watch amusedly. Ballantyne's eyes grow steely. His mouth presses into a thin, hard line. His pals breeze in.
What's this, Sergeant? Buying a trousseau?
We're buying curtains.
Oh, I thought it was front defense, the kind civilians wear in the tea business.
Will you two leave and stop annoying Tommy?
I'd like to oblige you, miss. But we're marching off to Tandapur in 20 minutes. And Tommy's marching with us.
But Higginbottom's replacing him. The colonel said that...
Higginbottom's in hospital, miss.
Yes, I grieve to say, miss, that the man is a tower of pain. Something he must have ate.
Or drank.
Sergeant Ballantyne, pull it!
Max strides to the door.
Oh, Tommy.
It's the colonel's orders, miss.
Tommy, these friends of yours have engineered this behind your back.
Don't cry, darling.
He kisses her strongly.
Goodbye.
He turns to his comrades.
This is the 9th of May. I'm going with you, Mac, for 5 days, and good company I'll be. But at sunset on May the 14th, when my time is up, whatever we are, whatever we're doing, I'm gonna knock you two apes' heads together. Now, come on.
Cutter stops him.
Pardon me, madam.
Pull it!
A curtain sticks to Ballantyne's belt like a bridal train as he walks away with them.
Tommy.
He turns and waves to Emmy, then looks down.
Oh, your petticoat's showing.
Cutter pulls it free. Ballantyne glares. The three sergeants head off side by side through the town. Later, the entire troop of the Muri outpost lines up on the parade field ready to march. Two rows of 100 pennant-carrying Indian cavalrymen start forward. Later, the army procession moves in two groups across the desert, the cavalry and the infantry. The three sergeants lead a smaller patrol of foot soldiers, horse-drawn carts, and pack elephants. That evening, atop a sharply pointed rock ridge at the village of Tantrapur, an Indian soldier stands watch. Below him, two elephants tow new telegraph poles into the village. A guard on another rock cups his hand to his mouth. Other guards man rooftops. One elephant roams free and grazes. Outside the domed building at one end of town, soldiers work at raising the new telegraph poles.
Watch number!
While McChesney and Cutter share a bottle of liquor on the patio, Ballantyne supervises the work.
Come on, swing those picks there. What do you think this is, a strawberry festival?
Come on, shake a leg with that pole. Come on, get it up there. Hurry at the double.
This is a fine time for things to go quiet. Blast them tugs. Why don't they come and give us a good fight? Then Barrel will be a pipe to re-enlist.
Yeah.
Come on, hurry up, I told you.
How can we get a nice little war going?
Come on, shake a leg with that pole.
Here. What if I was to sneak away and blow up the Taj Mahal or one of them sacred tombs?
What do you want to do, start the whole Indian mutiny again?
Come on, Annie, get your back into it. Now, come on, hurry up.
Look, he's even snarling at poor little Annie.
You can't work 24 hours a day, you know.
In another 24 hours, my time will be up. And I don't want to leave anything undone that might detain me. Come on, get it up there. Hurry at the double.
He's tired.
It just goes to show you what a piece of dry goods will do. A brilliant bloke like him, too. Cutter, we got to do something.
Cutter smirks drunkenly.
Here.
Getting up, he takes his glass and the half-empty bottle inside. Mac follows him into a simply furnished bedroom. Cutter closes the door and seats himself on a cot next to a small table.
Well, what now? Well, now look, Mac. For 4 days, we've been waiting here for them tugs to start something. 4 days in this cruel heat and horrible tension.
Well, what's that to do with Ballantyne?
Well, now, I'm coming to that now. Just a minute.
Well, go on, go on. Well,
Cutter takes a drink.
Look, 3 hours from where we're sitting by a secret trail, there's a gold temple waiting to be sliced away and carried off in a wheelbarrow.
Cut up! Have you started out for this buried treasure again?
Just a minute, Mac. This one ain't buried. According to Gunga Din, it's standing there, right out in the open.
Oh, according to Gunga Din, eh? I thought he might have been at the bottom of all this.
Oh, Mac.
Hey, what's the idea of this slushing? Give me that bottle.
Oh, wait. Just a minute. McChesney, I'm here to speak, and I'm going to have my say. Now, look, you want Ballantyne to stay with us, don't you?
Of course I want him to stay.
Well, you know, all right, just a minute. Now, it's as easy as parting your hair. All we got to do is take Bell to the temple with us, show him the gold, and the moment he starts slicing at it, marriage and the tea business will whiz from his mind. McChesney, versus that, you can't think of a single argument.
Cut up. I'm warning you.
Yeah, what's the matter with you?
What's the matter with me? I'm sick of it. Now shut your trap now.
His cleft chin set, Cutter gets in Mac's face.
You mean you won't go?
No. And if you mention gold temples again to me, I'll tear the back right off you with a shovel.
Very well, McChesney. You made your choice. I offered you the chance to be a millionaire and you turned it down. All right. I'm going alone.
He stomps into the main room.
Wait a minute. Cutter, you ain't leaving this village without my permission. Give me that bottle.
McChesney, I've been a soldier for 14 years. I know my duties as well as you do, but you're not talking to a soldier now. You're talking to an expedition. I'm an expedition. Out of my way.
Cutter, sit down before I throw you down.
Now, make way for the expedition if you know what's good for you. McChesney, goodbye forever.
Mac blocks his way.
Stand back. I'll throw you in the clink if you make a move.
Nah. Out of me way before I spit your jaw.
Cutter, I'm warning you.
Come on.
Cutter dances like a boxer, waving his fists menacingly. Mac glares at him through narrowed eyes.
Look,
Come on, come on, come on. Out of your way, out of your way. I'll bat your ugly face in, that's what I'll do.
Windmilling his fists, he juts out his jaw tauntingly.
Come on. Come on, put him up, put him up. Go on, put him up.
I'm afraid I have to do it.
Max socks his jaw. Cutter slumps into his arms.
Sergeant Ballantyne.
Ballantyne comes inside, tired and dirty.
What? Come here. Poor fella's taken with a dizzy spell. Lock him up safely till he comes to.
Ballantyne hefts the taller Cutter over his shoulder.
I'll lock him up all right. I'm only sorry it wasn't you had a dizzy spell too, and I lock you both up at the same time.
Cutter wakes up and grabs the liquor bottle as Ballantyne carries him out. Later that night, Cutter gazes blearily through the wooden bars of a cell window. Outside, a sentry paces to and fro, a rifle at his shoulder. Gunga Din appears by a building 50 feet off. When the sentry moves away, Dean sprints toward Cutter's cell. He hides around a corner. The sentry comes back, then marches away again.
Silent.
Cutter hurries to the window.
Good old Dean. What's up?
Tonight, when everyone sleeps, Dean go back again. See gold.
You did? Oh, where is it? Didn't you bring any with you?
Shy beast, he cannot carry whole temple.
Cutter gapes.
Whole temple?
Dean see all gold.
Yeah.
He shakes the thick wooden bars.
Yeah, here now. We gotta get out of here now. Now get me some tools, something to rip these blinking bars out with.
Already been all tools good fine. Yeah. Is this satisfactory, Sahib?
A dinner fork.
What do you think I want to break out of a blooming pudding? Now go on, get something big, jelly.
He looks around.
Quiet.
Dean runs off. Cutter shakes his head at the fork and sits down to wait. In the elephant stable, Annie lies on her side. Gunga Din runs up and starts pushing at her head.
Please, honey.
She doesn't budge. Dean takes a 2-foot-long riding hook and nudges her with it. Annie raises her head. She lies back down for a moment, then rises again and slowly gets to her feet. Hooking the rod to the top of Annie's left ear, Dean leads the elephant out of the stable. They move briskly through the dark and stop at the window of the one-room jail. Inside, Cutter waits anxiously. Annie snakes her trunk through the thick wooden bars and nudges Cutter's back. Startled, he turns and sees the nosing trunk. His eyes widen in surprise.
Annie! What are you doing, Dean?
The large tool you ask for, Sahib.
Cutter grins.
Annie! Annie! Come on, pull these blinking bars out for me. Come on, wait for me. Get me out of here, Annie.
Annie butts the window with her 3-foot-wide head.
Whoa, Annie! Just the bars!
The whole wall crumbles and comes crashing down. Cutter scrambles out of the way as Annie plows forward, knocking over the opposite foot-thick wall. The sentry comes over to the still-standing door. Annie plows into that wall, and it falls around the sentry. Debris covers Annie's broad back as she stomps through the ruins. Gunga Din stops her. Using the rod to pull her head down, he clambers up and sits atop her neck. Cutter runs after them. Grabbing hold of Annie's wrinkled skin, he climbs awkwardly onto her back. The sentry emerges from the rubble. Dean turns Annie around, past the demolished jail. The sentry aims his rifle at them. He fires alarm shots into the air. Now Mac wakes up Ballantyne.
What? The thugs are here!
Well, why didn't you say so? I'd like to get a final crack.
Annie heads for the mountains.
Sergeant McChesney, what happened? Take my son, slipped to the guard and stole elephant.
What's that?
Thugs stole Annie.
Stole Annie? Why, the devils ain't nothing they wouldn't stoop to. How many were there?
Didn't make out.
Where which way'd they go?
To the hill.
Bugler, sound assembly. Sergeant Ballantyne, pick 16 men for pursuit and follow me.
Jeez, Kaker, this is another one of your tricks. I'll smash your face up.
Hold in the remainder and put every man on guard duty.
Very good, sir.
Feel Annie, will they? I'll bring every thug back in India.
Later, Annie carries Dean and Cutter through barren, rocky foothills. The early morning sunlight slants low, bathing some boulders and leaving others still in deep shadow. Puffy clouds dot the brightening sky. On Annie's back, Cutter glances around.
Hey, Dean, are you sure you're on the right trail?
Yes, sir. Here
seriously breached, Sire.
He points ahead. Annie slows to a stop in front of a narrow rope and wood bridge. Cutter slides down to the ground. He and Dean walk to the edge of the rickety bridge, which spans a 50-foot-wide canyon. A river flows far below.
Here, is this bridge safe?
Oh, it's safe, Sire.
A slat breaks under Cutter's foot. Dean helps him struggle back up.
Safe? What do you mean, safe? Come on,
Annie!
The elephant has come up to the bridge. Dean waves her away.
Carina, home!
10 feet out, the two men cling to the rope railing as Annie steps closer.
Make her stop, that she's making me nervous!
Annie lifts her huge foot. Cutter heads for the other side.
Get out of my way now, will you? Big left.
The bridge sways precariously. Dean and Cutter stop halfway across as Annie lifts her foot to step onto the bridge.
Annie!
Oh, Annie, take your foot off here!
The elephant reaches her trunk toward a large knot in the bridge's single rope railing.
Annie, take your trunk off! Annie, please go back!
Annie's trunk wraps around the railing and pulls. The bridge rocks like a tossing boat. The two men hang on tightly. Cutter and Dean scramble desperately to the far side. Reaching solid ground, they look over at Annie, who finally steps back from the bridge. The two men move on. Later, they spot a stone temple topped by a shining dome.
Gold, Bugler, gold! Oh, look at it, Bugler, look at it! That's yours and mine, that is yours and mine. Archibald Cutter, the blooming Duke, look at me. And Raja Gungajit, pouring timers on that there blinking water bag.
Sire, Bugler will be very satisfactory.
Come on, Dean, the world is ours!
The two men hurry through a narrow, high-walled pass to the temple. Cutter beckons Dean, and they jog up a set of steps to a row of massive carved stone pillars. Cutter frowns and looks back. High up on one of the surrounding mountain slopes, robed figures form a long, torch-bearing procession which descends toward the temple. Cutter and Dean retreat behind a pillar to watch. The procession nears the bottom of the slope. Dean and Cutter duck around a corner and press back into the shadows. The procession numbers over 100. The torches blaze in the darkness as the white-robed figures approach the temple steps. The two men retreat further into the temple and hide among long rows of 4-foot-thick columns. The arriving Indian men climb the outer steps. They wear white cloths wrapped around their heads and chests like cloaks. Cutter and Dean flee into the temple's cavernous, shadowy main hall. Cutter glances desperately around, then leads Dean to one side. They stop in front of a stone sculpture of a fierce goddess who holds a weapon in each of her many arms. Dean gapes.
Cutter! Sire! Come quick!
They run behind one of the columns which line the hall just as the first of the Indian worshippers enters. Still in single file, they split into two lines which proceed slowly along the edges of the hall. Cutter and Dean watch from their hiding place. Torchlight flickers on their faces. Now, worshippers without torches enter the hall in a solemn, orderly crowd. Their faces are hooded and downcast. One man moves to a stone dais at the end of the hall, opposite from the goddess statue, and seats himself cross-legged. Torchlight flows upon the stone wall behind him.
O Tugs, lift up your faces to the light that shines from Kali's throne. Come on! O brothers intervened, we are the friendless of this earth. Every man's hand is against us. We have been kicked, spat upon, and driven to the hills like wild things. My father was a Tug. He was hanged. His father was blown from a cannon's mouth. And what of your kinsmen?
your fathers and their fathers and their fathers' fathers before them. Oh, my brothers, a new day is at hand. I have read the omens, dear good. 3 nights ago, a jackal streamed upon the left. Another answered from the right at once.
The bald guru gives them a sinister, penetrating stare.
What does that mean, my brothers? It means the Mother Kali, with all her arms outstretched, hugs us to her bosom, welcoming us back as tugs. Tugs awakened from a sleep of 50 years. Let the neophytes and their teachers draw near.
A few dozen hooded cult members advance and divide into two rows of neophytes and two rows of teachers. The neophytes remove their hoods.
Where are the stranglers? Give them their strangling cloths.
Half of the initiates kneel and receive cloths from their teachers.
Give them their burial picks.
The others receive pickaxes.
Swear by our Mother Kali to be thrice faithful to her and to me and to our order and to all of us.
Dean watches fearfully. Cutter frowns scornfully.
Rise, our new-made brothers. Rise and kill. Kill lest you be killed yourselves. Kill for the love of killing. Kill for the love of Kali. Kill, kill, kill.
The tugs erupt into cheers, jumping and waving their torches. Cutter and Dean look on from their hiding place, transfixed by the scene. The guru closes his eyes and lowers his bald head in prayer. The tugs fall still and bow their heads. Cutter leans close to his companion.
Is them all right, Dean? The whole blinking lot of them.
Very bad, man.
Dean stares at them, paralyzed. Cutter glances urgently around.
The colonel's got to know.
He leads Dean through the shadows toward the front entrance, but a row of tugs, motionless in prayer, blocks their path. Cutter and Dean stay unseen behind them. Cutter steps slowly forward, his soldier's boots treading carefully across the stone floor toward a tug who stands at the end of a row. Dean watches from the shadows as Cutter creeps up behind the intently praying tug. Cutter whips off the man's shawl and clamps a forearm around his throat. Gunga Dean catches the shawl and watches as Cutter tightens his stranglehold. The tug strains to breathe. His eyes close and he goes limp. Cutter frowns and shakes with the strain as he gently lowers the dead tug to the floor. Dean watches with wide eyes as Cutter pulls the tug into the shadows behind a massive stone pillar. Cutter looks around tensely, his eyes darting. He rises from his victim. Glancing sharply at the nearby tugs, Cutter slips into the shadows and leans close to the waiting Dean.
You must get there, Dean. The colonel's got to know.
The colonel? I rotten quick.
Dean throws the shawl around his head and moves off, but his way is blocked by the oblivious tugs. He stares back at Cutter, who motions him to wait. Cutter nervously straightens his uniform, then steps into the crowd with a jaunty swagger.
Since my heroes beef is an Englishman's food, it accounts for the freedom that runs in his blood. For generous living to step to all good. Excuse me, mates. Da-da-da-da-da. All the roast beef of England and all the old English roast beef.
As the tugs close in around him, he signals Dean, who makes his getaway.
Hey! Hey! Sing us a song, will you?
A bearded tug grabs Cutter's shoulder and hauls him before the guru's platform. Cutter faces the crowd squarely, his hands on his hips.
Now, you're all under arrest.
He turns to the guru.
A whole bunch of you. And you too, and you know why. Her Majesty's very touchy about having her subject strangled. All right, I can't waste any more time. Come on, wrap up all your gear. You're coming with me. Hurry up about it.
Guru Ji.
The saboteur steps up.
Well, if it ain't young Toadface, fancy meeting you here.
Vile dog. For that insolence, you shall grovel before my son. You shall grovel, I say.
Look here. I'm a soldier of Her Majesty the Queen. I don't grovel before any heathen.
Kabul, take him to the tower and teach him the error of false pride. Take him away.
Cutter socks one of the tugs and tries to escape. The crowd of shirtless, turban-wearing men angrily closes in on him and drags him away. Now, in the desert, Mac and Ballantyne ride side by side, leading a company of soldiers.
In those drear, gray hours before dawn, just go out and chase elephants. Beats counting sheep a million miles.
What do you mean, elephants? This ain't elephants. This is Annie. My Annie. I'll find if I have to turn out the whole British army. Hey, what the blazes is this?
Ah, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. What the blaze are you here for?
I've come to replace Sergeant Ballantyne, McChesney.
Oh.
Higginbottom, I could just fall on your neck.
Well, I've got a better neck than mine you can fall on. That's a good one. Hello there.
Tommy, hello.
It's Emmy. Ballantyne rides over to her.
How wonderful of you to meet us. I came here to surprise you, and here you are surprising me.
She sits in a covered wagon.
Good morning, Sergeant McChesney.
Oh, good morning, miss.
Here are Tommy's discharge papers.
Ballantyne's grin fades.
Cutter will be very pleased about this.
Mac faces his men.
Cut him out thrice! Eyes front and sit up straight there! What do you think you are, a lot of blinking nursemaids and I...
McChesney sends Higginbottom a withering, beady-eyed stare.
Work much!
He glances at Higginbottom, who remains mum. Later, the company arrives back at Tantrapur. The soldiers halt their horses. McChesney glances around and spots Annie the elephant next to Gunga Din and a group of Indian soldiers.
Sergeant Ballantyne, take charge.
You go inside, dear, and I'll be right with you.
All right, dear, but do hurry so we can leave, sir.
Annie. Mike, what about this?
He just came back, Sergeant Saab.
Oh.
Come here. Come here, you. Dean, I knew you was at the bottom of all this.
Sergeant.
You knocked down the shed and took off Sergeant Cutter, didn't you? Oh, you'll answer me, all right. We'll have our own little court-martial right here and now. Line up a firing squad.
Sir, please, pardon.
You stole the elephant, didn't you? Answer me. You knocked down a building and liberated one of Her Majesty's prisoners. Sergeant Cutter, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
That's all. Take him away. You Lazarusian beggar. It'll be the firing squad for you this time.
Wait a minute, Mac. Where's Cutter?
Dean, where's Sergeant Cutter?
They caught him.
What's that?
Who?
In the gold temple, they catch him, Sergeant Cutter.
Yep. Oh, who's they? Priest or what?
Very bad men. They're going to give him torture. Sarge, go ahead, quick.
How many were there?
Don't know. I run away quick to bring help.
I'll bet you ran away quick. And you're going to run back just as quick, too. Stand by to show me the way.
I'll pick a dozen men, Sergeant.
You'll pick nothing. I'm going alone.
He strides away.
Oh, Madge, you haven't a chance.
I'm not killing Sergeant Cutter by riding with a troop. They'll cut him up and scatter him over a fire if they have a rescue party.
You're right. We'll go together.
Now you don't.
Tommy.
Oh, hello.
What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Only Cutter got himself into some mess, and Mac and I are leaving immediately to get him out of it.
Don't worry, Miss Stebbins. I ain't taking him.
What?
I'm going as a sergeant of Majesty's service. I ain't taking any civilians with me. Who's a civilian? It says here, Thomas Anthony Ballantyne is restored to the rank of citizen of Great Britain. And his duty to Her Majesty's service is over and done with.
You try and keep me out of this.
I'm saying goodbye, Bal. And I wish you luck in the tea business and your matrimony both.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Mac. Darling, wait right here a second. I have to talk to him.
But he said you can't go.
Yeah, I know, but he'll change his mind.
I don't want you to go. I won't let you go.
Darling, I have to go. I owe it to Cutter. He saved my life time and again.
You don't love me.
Oh, don't say that. Do you want me to go through life remembering that I ran out on one of my two best friends?
Your two best friends?
Yes.
After what they did to Higginbottom and dragging you up here again.
Oh, that's just a way of showing their friendship, that's all. But I hate the blasted army. I'm through with it. But friendship will... Well, that's something else. But, darling, we're wasting valuable time. You have to understand. I'll be right back.
Inside.
Now, look here, Mac. I want to talk to you.
Oh, it's you. I don't want
to
argue.
I'm going if I have to shoot you and go alone.
You know as well as I do, Bell, why you can't go. If anything happens to you, I'd be in a fine mess dragging in a civilian. Your girl would prefer charge.
She wouldn't, though.
I don't trust her.
Mac suddenly stops short.
There's only one way I'll risk it.
What's that?
You to sign up. When we get Cutter, we'll tear up the papers, and it'll be neat and according to regulations. Is that fair enough for you?
No, you're getting clever again.
Hey, what do you want to do? Get me kicked out of the army?
All right, I'll sign, but on one condition. That I hold the blank in my hand and I keep it out from through.
Oh. You don't trust me.
Val smiles.
That's right.
Mac's broad face spreads in a wide, toothy grin.
All right.
They sit at a table. Mac pulls a folded-up paper from his breast pocket and gives it to Valentine. Val frowns.
What are you doing with that in your pocket?
I always carry one, in case.
Val takes a pen and starts to sign the form. Mac watches. Dimples crease his strong cheeks as he beams. He reaches for the form. Val pulls it back, smirking. They stand up to go.
Not a word of this to me, you understand? Shake on it.
The two friends shake hands.
Hurry up.
Outside, Mac finds Emmy and Higginbotham.
Oh, excuse me, miss. Sergeant Higginbotham. Sergeant Valentine and I are going out on a reconnoitering expedition.
Yes, Sergeant?
If we're not back by morning, inform the Colonel and you follow our trail. Come this way.
Excuse me, Miss Devins.
Val comes out.
Oh, I'm going, Emmy. He's changed his mind.
Who made him change it?
Oh, reason and common decency.
You're lying, Tommy.
Darling, would I lie at a time like this? Just before our wedding, be reasonable, darling.
You didn't sign anything.
Why ask a question like that? Do I look that stupid? Now, you just pretend that I'm going off on a picnic, because that's all it'll amount to. We'll get Cutter out of that gold temple of his without firing a shot, just by pure strategy. We've done things like this before. It's just been a lot of fun, that's all.
Fun?
Yeah, nothing else.
You want to go?
Well, darling.
Sergeant Valentine, pull it!
Right, sir.
He called you Sergeant. Why is he still calling you Sergeant? You're not in the army.
It's just no habit of his. It's hard to break. I'll see you tomorrow, huh?
How do you lie to me? Why didn't you come right out and say you don't want to get married? You'd rather be with him. Why fool me by telling me how much I hated him and his ugly face and all the ugly faces in the army?
Darling, I didn't say quite that. Now, be fair.
Please, sir, hurry.
Come on, Sergeant.
Oh, can't you wait a minute, Mac?
Sure, I can wait. But I'm not so sure about Cutter.
Darling, can't you trust me just this once? Kiss me goodbye, please.
No, never.
They're probably slicing Cutter's ears off by now.
I'm coming, Mac.
Darling, please don't go.
The trouble is, you don't want a man for a husband. You want a coward who'll run out on his friend when they're in danger. Well, that's not me and never was and never will be. I don't care how much I love you. And I do very much. I'm a soldier. I mean, I'm a man first.
He grabs Emmy and kisses her, then runs to his horse.
All right, McCheesecake. Get that silly smirk off your face.
All right, come on.
Then let's go.
Val mounts up. He, Mac, and Dean ride swiftly out of Tantripur. Later, they dismount at the rickety, rope and wood slat bridge. As Dean follows the two sergeants across the bridge, the guru's son watches from the other side, then hurries away. Three more tugs appear from hiding and lead away the British horses. Now, outside the temple, the hooded guru walks with two sword-bearing guards.
Surely Mother Kali is kind, Fulad. One Englishman fly walks in. Now our web is baited. More will follow.
Guruji! Two more have crossed the bridge.
It is well. Prepare.
One of the soldiers heads for the temple. Later, Valentine, McChesney, and Gunga Dean reach the high-walled mountain pass. Valentine stops and surveys the area. A jagged ridge looms above to the right. The 50-foot square-sided temple lies just ahead. Another steep cliff walls the pass to the left. McChesney looks too. Nothing moves in the bright sunlight. Valentine starts toward the temple, carrying his rifle, an ammunition belt, and his sword. McChesney and Dean follow. The weathered stone temple has several tiers, creating a squat, jagged-edged tower topped by the golden dome. The three men cautiously mount the steps and move toward the shadowy columns into the main hall. Tugs with rifles slip behind them and block the way out. The sergeants turn to see the entire tug group hidden and waiting. McChesney frowns and leans close to Dean.
You said this place was full of priests.
Sir, do not give Dean chance to say.
Well, you got a mouth, ain't you?
Why? It's Kali.
Mac turns and sees the statue of Kali.
A tug temple.
He glares at Dean.
My dad told me they were tugs. I'm good mind to spit you in two and stuff you up an elephant's trunk, why?
McChesney, sir, roar so loud, poor beast, they cannot get a word sideways between roarings.
Ah, after that, we're here to find Cutter.
Val breaks them up. He glances suspiciously at the surrounding tugs and takes a deep breath.
Cutter!
The Guru's son advances. Mac faces him with his rifle.
Should have brought every man in the regiment and sent for more.
I only wish you had, Sam.
Mac charges. Several tugs aim their rifles at him and he freezes. More tugs come forward and hustle the three men up a curving stone staircase to a large prison chamber. Cutter is inside, his wrists strung to a thick pillar. Shirtless and drenched with sweat, he stands with his uniform draped over his back.
Cutter, sir.
Cutter tries to open his eyes.
Dean. Fine work, Bugler. I knew you'd do it.
Dean smiles.
Thank you, sir.
He moves aside as Bal comes over.
Hello, boy.
Hello, mate.
You're alive anyway. What's this? I'll chop you down right away. I'll get
Oh, so there you are, you white-livered elephant-stealing treasure hunter. Look at you, hanging there like a lamb in a butcher shop.
Where's the troop?
There's no troop when the Guru has us. We walked right into it.
Sergeant McChesney, you mean to tell me you didn't bring the troop? What a brain! I round up every tug in India and you mess it up with that pygmy brain!
Sergeant Cutter, I couldn't face my own men if I brought them here to witness your shame, disgracing our Majesty's uniform.
Shame? Why, they're doing this to me because they want to find out where the column is. They're going to plan to ambush and massacre the colonel and the old troop.
Hey, you didn't tell them, did you?
Not me.
Oh, so I suppose you think you're a hero.
That's right.
A hero. Don't make me laugh.
Every man at the post looking for these blighters, and I reconnoiter adroitly and encounter them. But you cowards, you are behind your telegraph poles in Tandrapur.
Who's a coward?
Mac turns to Ballantyne.
Untie will you?
Yes, untie him, will you?
Untie
him! Just let me get him
in! I said untie him! Sergeant Ballantyne, untie that man!
You displease me greatly, and I ignore the both of you.
Well, I'll untie you myself.
Yes, that's right. Take
I'll untie you.
But only all money, right. That's all I need of you. Just money.
As Cutter struggles, the uniform slips off his shoulders. Bloody whip marks cover his sweaty back.
Oh, mate. Look at your back.
Never mind, Anne. Untie my hand.
Oh, just look what they did to you. I'm sorry, mate. The fiends!
Outside, the Guru arrives.
The Guru!
The filthy scum.
Dog, maniac. Let's get him. Right. Here we go.
We'll grab him regardless of how many are with him. It's our only chance. He's sacred, so they won't shoot us.
Yeah.
As Mac and Bal try to untie Cutter's wrists, a tug throws open the chamber door. The Guru enters, accompanied by his son Chota and several armed tugs.
Why, you hellish dog! Look what you did to that man's back, you filthy!
Lesson in the error of false pride, Sergeant. You're talking very proudly yourself. Perhaps, though, you're not too proud to give a little information I seek. I want to know about your army.
Why don't you enlist, mate?
McChesney glares defiantly. The Guru clenches his jaw.
Bash.
He turns to Chota.
For the beginning, this is not bad, Chota. Three soldiers to be given to Mother Kali. Three soldiers and a slave.
Who is slave? I am a soldier too, please.
You're what?
Mac stares.
Well, regimental beastie.
Oh.
Proud ox, where is your army? How soon are they to follow?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Why don't you look in your crystal ball?
The Guru smiles.
Make the ox talk.
Pulling off Mac's shirt, they force him to his knees. A tug whips his back with a cat of nine tails.
Dirty pack of cowards!
Bal lunges at the whipper, who beats him back.
Never mind him. Now, he's next.
The Guru stares at McChesney.
I'm waiting. Will you speak?
I don't know.
Hold on, Mac, old boy.
Mac barely flinches.
Stop.
The Guru's eyes blaze out from his grim, hooded face. He points. Two tugs lead the weakened Mac to the edge of a stone pit. Dozens of writhing snakes cover the floor. Mac gapes.
Look. You see them down there, coiling and wiggling, sticking their pretty tongues out. Are you going to speak? Throw him in. He'll talk from there.
No! No, I can't stand it!
Will you speak?
All right. If I ain't kissed by one of them snakes, I'll tell you. Take me outside.
The tugs lead him out.
Be a man, Mac!
Oh, I can't go, mates! I can't go!
Come back, Mac, old boy! Come back!
Cutter looks down sadly as Mac leaves. Bal stares off with a grim frown. Just outside, tugs surround the tall, barrel-chested McChesney.
What, Sergeant?
All right, Governor. I don't know the exact position of the troops, but in Ballantyne's pocket, there's a paper with all the troop movements in it.
He grins.
You're sure of that, Sergeant?
Oh, as sure as taxis, Governor. I wouldn't fool you.
I hope not. If you have, they'll be worse than lashes.
Oh, please don't lash me anymore. Please.
Mac moves fearfully past a soldier back into the prison chamber. The guru steps up to the wary Ballantyne.
I'll relieve you of these.
He takes a piece of paper from Val's chest pocket, unfolds it, and studies it intently. The guru steps over to Mac and glances uncertainly from him to the paper. An armed tug guards the open doorway behind them. Mac takes the paper and pretends to read it. Suddenly, he grabs the tug's rifle and shoves the door shut, trapping the guru alone inside the chamber. Outside, Chota holds the tug's back. Mac tosses the rifle to Bal.
Cut him down.
Mac reads the paper.
Sergeant Thomas Ballantyne hereby re-enlists.
Mac grins.
Oh, that's you, McChesney, always hiding behind regulations.
Bal frees Cutter.
No. Be gallant in defeat, Sergeant. You're simply a victim of superior strategy.
Quiet, you white shirtless scum, or I'll cut your slimy hands over the wrists. Oh, I'll pay you back, both of you. Pay you back with horrible interest.
I command you to shut up.
Mac turns to his prisoner.
Tell your men to lay down their arms and get out of here, or you're a dead kibber.
The guru turns to the door.
Lay down your arms and leave.
Outside, the tugs back away.
Where do those stairs lead to?
Not to freedom.
Oh, we'll see about that. Now get ready.
All right.
Stone steps curve up along the chamber wall. Gunga Dean and the three sergeants start to climb. Mac holds the guru as a shield toward the door below.
Sergeant Cutter, guard that door.
Right. Here, Mac, take
a cover. Mac shoves the stoic guru up the steps. Outside the chamber, the tug soldiers hurry down to the main hall. Now, the guru and his captors reach the temple roof, a small open porch with 3-foot-high walls surrounding the high dome of sculpted gold. Mac and Bal drop to the floor. Peeking over, Bal sees dozens of armed tugs on the ground below. Chota aims. Bal ducks again.
Young toadface there blazing up the tugs. I think I'll start in with him first.
The sergeants cower on the floor as the guru stands calmly beside them.
Well, gentlemen, what do you think of your freedom now?
Mac crawls over to the guru and holds a bayonet to his belly.
All right, my friend. If we've got to die, you got to die too.
As long as I'm alive, you live.
Mac slowly pulls the knife away. The guru, his head and torso swathed in a loose white robe, moves forward and spreads his arms to his followers below.
Ujai ne nuksan kulmat muchao, borusa rupo, or taro.
What did he say?
He says he'll be unharmed. He says to keep order, be confident, and wait.
Congratulations, Sergeant, on your knowledge of a humble language.
All right, that's enough. Get under the shade before you get sunstroke. Go on, get under. Go on. Get under.
Still standing, the impassive guru turns away. In the chamber below, Dean helps Cutter on with his coat.
Wounds feel satisfactory, sir?
Dean, I ain't had a more satisfactory set of welts since I run away from home.
Thank you, sir.
Fall in. Come on.
Dean follows Cutter up the steps to the roof.
Get down.
Hey, watch your head. Look out.
They lie low. Cutter sees the golden dome decorated with ornate relief sculptures.
Dean! The gold!
Yes, I have gold!
Cutter scrambles up.
Look at it, mate! Look at it! Hey, gold, that's what it is! Real solid sunshine! Why, you see that little hand sticking out there? I'll bet that little hand's worth 3,000 quid if it's worth a farthing. Who's a big idiot now, eh? We're rich, mates! We're rich! Come on!
Cutter gapes and dives for cover. The guru remains standing calm amid the ricochets of stone dust. Nighttime. Moonlight bathes the weathered stone temple. The dome glints dully amid the surrounding rock slopes. On the roof, the guru sits cross-legged, his tight-lipped mouth turned down at the corners. The three sergeants slump wearily against another wall. The next morning, the rising sun sparkles off the Golden Dome spire. On the rocky ground far below, Tug soldiers and horsemen wait. On the temple roof, the sergeants, Dean, and the guru have hardly moved. Mac glares across at the captive guru.
All right, Mr. Wise Man. Here's my last offer. You order your men to get in behind them rocks. And you see us down as far as the bridge, or we'll let you loose. And there's no harm done. How's that?
He rests his sweating head against the wall. The old man stares grimly ahead, unblinking. Mac gets up and lunges at him, brandishing the bayonet knife.
Speak, you ape, or I'll kill you.
The guru looks at him.
You would throw away your shield, brave soldier?
He shakes his head slowly, then turns away again, stone-faced. Mac pulls away the knife and gets up dejectedly to go back to his spot. He ducks down. He sits between the slumping Ballantyne and the brooding Cutter.
Did you hear something, Val?
Bagpipes, Mac?
Yeah.
I've been hearing them for hours, Mac, but it ain't them. It's this blistering heat screaming in our ears that makes it sound like that.
That'll pull us out, old boy. If they can find the blasted place.
No wasting your guff on me, Mac. Here we are, and this is it. Might have been worse, though. Might have left a widow.
Cutter looks up at the Golden Dome and licks his lips.
Hmm. 8 feet away from where I'm sitting. Right here. There's enough gold to make me sole owner and proprietor of a pub as big as a Crystal Palace. Best pub in Hampshire. And here I am.
He faces the guru.
You torturer! Setting that in front of my eyes. Is there no limit to the torture an Oriental mind can think of?
So help me, Cutter. If you mention gold again to me, I'll tear the tongue right out of your head.
Well, here it is! Here it is! Get it!
The guru watches them with a sly smile.
Brave soldiers. Could it be that your nerves are tightening?
We can stand it up here as long as you can, Mr. Wiseman.
Preserve your courage, gentlemen. You are not forgotten.
He rises from his cross-legged position.
They will come to save you.
That's right, mate. You're going to see more soldiers than you ever saw before.
Cutter.
Val gives a warning wave. The guru gazes down toward a far-off desert plain. His eyes widen. An army troop approaches, a long, dark column winding like a line of ants.
Ah, gentlemen, good news. Here is a sight that shall make your hearts pound faster. Look.
He points. Dean and the sergeants get to their knees and peer over the wall toward the desert. More of the troop, hundreds strong, comes into view. Val grins.
Lances. Look at the Black Watch out in front.
The pipe and drum corps leads the way, followed by marching soldiers and pack elephants.
Oh, those beautiful Scotties. I'll buy them all a beer apiece.
Your comrade's coming chokes you with emotions. Seeing them this way recalls to you all manner of pleasant things. The gaiety of barrack life, old friendships, even England, even home.
You bet it does, mister.
The three men get up and wave their arms.
Hey! Save your voices, gentlemen. They're coming. Here, to your rescue.
You tormenting fiend.
You're so sure, Arsh.
Quite sure. It is my plan. Two come to rescue one, and the others follow.
Yeah. Well, if you planned it right, mate, you'll be hanging by your filthy neck by nightfall.
You think so, Sergeant?
He grins.
not so sure.
The sergeant stared darkly at him as he strolls around the dome to the other side of the roof. They follow him.
You seem to think warfare an English invention. Have you never heard of Chandragupta Maurya?
No.
He slaughtered all the armies left in India by Alexander the Great. India was a mighty nation then, while Englishmen still dwelt in caves and painted themselves blue.
He turns to the scene below.
Look.
The sergeants stay where they are.
Don't be afraid, gentlemen. I'm still your shield.
Frowning suspiciously, the men step to the wall but keep close behind him.
It is very simple. Your army will enter by that gap. Let them proceed halfway down this gorge. Those are my infantry, the best mountain fighters in the world. At a given signal, they will open fire on your troops, driving them forward into the trap. That is my artillery, rather neatly concealed, don't you think? My gunners greet them with a full salute. And finally, in come my horsemen. This is, gentlemen, my household cavalry, similar to that which guards the person of your Queen Empress. Each man is mounted on a valiant charger and eager to slay for his guru. The honor of the thundering and slaughter of your army falls to them.
Mac, Bal, and Cutter glare menacingly at the short guru.
I see it in your faces. Who is this ugly little savage to snarl so boldly at the British lion? Prime generals' friends are not made of jewel swords and mustache wax. They are made of what is there and what is here.
You're mad.
Mad? Mad. Hannibal was mad. Caesar was mad. And Napoleon surely was the maddest of the lot. Ever since time began, they've called mad all the great soldiers in this world. Mad? We shall see what wisdom lies within my madness. But this is but the spring freshet that precedes the flood. From here we roll on, from village to town, from town to mighty city, ever mounting, ever widening, until at last my wave engulfs all India.
He looks down at his men.
My soldiers! March!
On the ground, Chota signals the foot soldiers forward. Valentine shakes his fist.
This is cold face. If you make a move, I'll talk to them.
Mac holds the guru at knife point. The soldiers stop.
Obey me, my son!
The soldiers remain. Chota gazes up at his father.
Beloved guru, our men, they will not move if it is to cost your life.
What is my life to the life of our cause? Go!
No! They will not let you die!
Go! Go! Go!
The guru dashes away down the steps into the prison chamber. The sergeants chase him. Cutter reaches the door first and blocks his way.
No, you don't. We need you.
Outside the door, Chota watches through a slit as the guru moves toward the snake pit.
Wait a minute. You have sworn as soldiers, if need be, to die for your faith, which is your country, your England. Well, India is my country and my faith, and I can die for my faith and my country as readily as you for yours. Go, Chota. India, farewell.
He turns and jumps into the snake pit. Chota screams in grief. Above the pit, Dean and the sergeants gape in horror. A tug aims his rifle through the door slit. Cutter is hit in the leg. He wobbles, then collapses. Mac and Bal drag him to his feet and out of the line of fire. Outside, angry tugs surround the shooter.
You were born English. You must die.
Two tugs strangle him.
Our guru has given his life for our cause. We must not fail him now.
The tugs hurry downstairs.
We gotta get up there and warn the Scottish before they're trapped.
We may not warn them, but we're gonna try.
Now tugs climb to the temple roof.
Steps!
Armed with swords and rifles, they charge down the steps. Bal shoots one. Dean grabs the tug's gun and charges at the others. They retreat to the roof.
Let's go!
Bal and Mac follow Dean. Cutter stumbles on his wounded leg. Reaching the roof, Dean and the two sergeants fight off the swarming tugs. Cutter drags himself and a sword up the stairs. As he reaches the top, he sees Dean bayonet a burly tug.
Good work, soldier!
Thank you, sir.
A tug creeps up behind Dean and bayonets him in the back. Cutter watches in horror as Dean sinks to the stone floor. Cutter tries to fight the tug, but another knocks him on the head with a rifle butt. The first tug buries his bayonet deep in Cutter's shoulder, pulls it out, and moves away. Mac and Bal are soon subdued and gagged with cloths. Later, a tug on the temple roof surveys the surrounding area through binoculars. More armed tugs lie in wait among the boulders of the sloping gorge walls. The barren, scree-covered ground gradually descends from the gorge to the faraway desert. The British troop, both foot soldiers and mounted cavalry, advances uphill in a long, curving column. On the roof, the stocky Chota forces Mac and Bal to kneel at the wall.
Look! Before I have your faces tied to bags of hot ashes, I want you to watch, as though you were Rajas at an imperial durbar, while your comrades are slain to the last man.
Below the temple, dozens of Tug soldiers and horsemen wait among the rocky slopes near the valley's entrance. The British troop steadily advances toward the mountain temple. Elephants carry cannons on their backs. Colonel Weed rides in front with Major Mitchell on his right and a civilian on his left. Behind them march the kilt-uniformed Scottish Pipe and Drum Corps and soldiers. The colonel looks back at them, shares a proud smile with Mitchell, and turns to the civilian beside him.
You see, soldiering isn't all war, Mr. Journalist.
The young, well-dressed gentleman smiles under his mustache. On the temple roof, the stocky Chota and his fellow tugs watch with evil smiles as the British approach the gorge. Behind them, Cutter opens his eyes.
They're coming in.
Dean awakens beside him.
The colonel's got to know.
Cutter tries to push himself up, but immediately collapses. Gunga Dean struggles to rise, propping his elbow on the unconscious Cutter's back. Among the valley rocks, tugs spy on the approaching troop, which is still far below on the scrubby mountain plain. Chota and several tugs continue to watch. Mac and Bal frown above their gags. Meanwhile, the wounded Dean crawls painfully over to a fallen tug. The soldier has a bugle strapped around his shoulder. Dean gently eases the strap over the tug's head and takes the bugle. He gazes up at the golden dome shining in the bright sun. Keeping his eyes on the oblivious tugs ahead of him, Dean crawls to the base of the dome and starts to climb. Grimacing in pain, he hauls himself up against the vertical, sculpted side. Cutter regains consciousness and watches as his determined Indian friend finds foot and handholds in the niches of the sculpted figures. Dean reaches his blood-streaked arm high and pulls himself up another several inches. Cutter lies still on his stomach. He turns with difficulty to eye the tugs below him who watch the approaching troop. Dozens of tugs wait on the rocky slopes at the mouth of the pass. Half a mile down the path, the first rows of marching soldiers appear. Dean clings to a round stone lip above the gold relief sculptures. As he takes a step higher, his feet slip and he dangles by his hands. The tugs lying in wait alongside the path ready their rifles. Two Scottish soldiers, far ahead of the rest, round a bend. Two tugs jump out and strangle them. Mac and Bal watch. Bal's eyes bulge in anger. Behind them on the roof, Dean continues to climb. A rounded golden roof with a small notched spire caps the temple dome. Dean's right hand inches up, finger by finger, and grasps the stone lip at the base of the roof. His left hand follows. Dean's arms shake with the effort as he gradually hauls himself onto the 5-foot-wide dome cap. Far below, the advance guard of foot soldiers nears the narrow pass entrance. Tugs wait in the surrounding rocks. As Dean watches, they rise and aim their rifles at the approaching soldiers. Dean's eyes bulge in alarm. He stands unsteadily on the curved dome top and raises the bugle to his lips. Colonel Weed raises his arm to halt his men. The Scottish soldiers break from their narrow column and run to form four defensive rows of 20 soldiers each, which span the pass entrance. Tug starts shooting at Dean. Dean's body jerks, but he stays standing. He tumbles backward off the dome. Now, Colonel Weed directs his troops.
You take the left flank, I'll take the right.
Yes, sir.
The British cavalry forces split in half, kicking up dust as they gallop across the rocky terrain to take positions on each side of the pass entrance. On the temple roof, Chota desperately signals his men. Cutter looks over at Gunga Dean, who lies dead on his back.
Good work, people.
Now hundreds of Tug horsemen and foot soldiers charge toward the pass. Other Tugs wheel a large cannon toward the action. On the roof, Chota and his men run for the stairs.
Cut their heads off!
One Tug stays behind and raises his sword at the tied-up Mac and Bao. Behind him, Cutter unsteadily aims a rifle and shoots the Tug in the back. The Tug falls. As Mac and Bao untie themselves, Tugs on the ground aim their cannon at the temple roof, load and light the fuse. Mac and Bao drag Cutter out of the way as part of the roof's perimeter wall crumbles.
Here they come!
The Scottish infantry charges toward the pass. Tug foot soldiers flee. The wave of Scottish soldiers charges up a slope, firing at the disordered Tug horsemen. On the temple roof, Mac and Bao hoist the groggy Cutter between them and cheer on their men. Fighting rages over the rocky, boulder-strewn ground. On a higher slope, British horsemen tow a large wheeled artillery gun into position. Now, Scottish foot soldiers crest a slope and overwhelm the Tugs. Another British artillery gun arrives. Soldiers quickly set it up next to the first one. As dozens of Tug horsemen race below them, the British fire both guns at them. In the melee of hand-to-hand combat, a kilt-wearing Scottish soldier batters a Tug with his rifle butt. Now, some distance from the fighting, four British pack elephants carry carts on their backs. Two of them kneel, and teams of Scottish soldiers hurriedly unload the carts, which are the frames for Gatling guns. As more Tug cavalry storms across the pass, the Scottish soldiers unload two cylindrical Gatling guns from the other pair of elephants. With them set up on their frames, a commander gives the order to fire. The two gunners turn cranks which spin the gun barrels. Tug horsemen get caught in the fire and tumble off their horses. More Tugs flee as the Indian division of the British cavalry charges in a tight, swift column. Now the Tugs aim their cannon at the temple roof again and light the fuse. The shell hits right near Ballantyne. Mac tries to see through the smoke. He runs over and finds Ballantyne's limp body. Cutter squints curiously as Mac leans over his unconscious friend.
Now, speak to me, Bal.
Bal doesn't move.
They've killed him. They've killed him! You pay for this!
Bal opens one eye as Mac starts hurling rubble off the roof. Unharmed, Bal stands and joins in. Mac stops with a stone above his head and gapes at Bao. The disheveled young sergeant returns a growing smile. Mac drops the stone and notices one of his pockets has been emptied. Bao's got the reenlistment slip.
That's right. I don't trust you.
Why, you dirty scheming scum. You rotten.
Cutter shakes his head in amusement as his friends start tossing rubble again. Now, outside the pass, the bearded Indian commander of the British cavalry watches the Tug cavalry regroup. He raises his curved saber and starts the charge. They attack in a great dusty wave of pennant-bearing horsemen. Now, a second wave of British cavalry charges toward the narrow pass. In front, the Indian commander swings his saber over his head as he rides. At the mouth of the pass, the much smaller Tug cavalry turns tail and hastily retreats, with the troops in hot pursuit. Other Tugs flee on foot from the attacking cavalry. One horseman chases the terrified Chota and lances him with his banner pole. Now, at the wooden bridge spanning the canyon, Tugs chop at one of the supporting ropes anchoring it to the ground. Scottish soldiers arrive and chase them. About 20 other Tugs flee onto the bridge. Two of them stare in horror as the damaged rope pulls apart. The entire bridge plummets into the canyon, taking the Tugs with it. Back in the gorge, the remaining Tugs flee to the temple in disarray. They raise their weapons and surrender to the British cavalry sweeping in after them. Colonel Weed rides through the captives to his Indian cavalry leader.
Everything cleaned up, sir. Nice work, Mitchell. Thank you, sir.
The colonel salutes him, then salutes the entire Indian cavalry. Nighttime at the British Army campsite. Military tents and blazing bonfires line the edges of a broad square. On a hill overlooking the site, a Scottish pipe and drum corps leads a slow procession of infantry and cavalry in a funeral ceremony. Indian servants in loincloths carry, upon stretchers, the bodies of those who died in the battle. Nearby, an honor guard of Scottish soldiers stands in two facing rows.
Fire three volleys in the air. Ready!
They hold their rifles waist high.
Present!
They aim into the sky.
Fire!
Now, in a tent, the mustached civilian journalist scrawls in a notebook. Lamplight shines off his spectacles as he writes. The colonel reads over his shoulder.
Very good, my boy. Very good.
Thank you, Colonel.
Not half bad.
Thank you, Colonel.
The colonel smokes a pipe as he gazes from the tent.
Let's take a look to the men.
He dons his pith helmet and strolls out into the camp, followed by the wool cap clad journalist. Outside a medical tent, the body of Gunga Dean lies wrapped in a sheet. Sergeant McChesney pulls the sheet back from Dean's face. Nearby, Ballantyne squats next to Cutter, who lies with his chest bandaged. The colonel approaches. Mac and Bal snap to attention.
Stand easy, men. We've all done enough soldiering for one long day. You were fine today. Particularly fine. I'd sooner hear that from you, sir, than get a blooming medal.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Bal reaches for the reenlistment slip in his coat pocket. He gazes softly at Mac, then down at Cutter, and hands the dog-eared slip to the colonel.
Well, perhaps you'd take care of this for me, sir.
Mac's eyes shine proudly. Cutter smiles pensively. The colonel gazes down at Gunga Dean.
And here's a man whom the regiment will always be proud.
Dean's face is calm.
According to regulations, he had no actual status as a soldier. But those of us who had the privilege of serving with him today know that if ever a man deserved the name and rank of soldier, it was he. So I'm going to appoint him a corporal in this regiment.
Cutter's brow furrows in grief.
His name will be written on the rolls of our honored dead. And I... let me see that last part again, will you, Mr. Kipling?
The journalist hands the colonel his notebook.
Present! Ho!
A soldier raises his bugle. The colonel recites over Gunga Dean's body.
So I'll meet him later on. That's the place where he has gone. Where it's always double drill and no canteen.
He'll be squatting on the coals, giving drink to poor damned souls. And I'll get a swig in hell from Gunga Din. Yes, Dean. Dean, Dean. Your Lazarusian leather, Gunga Din. Though I belted you and flayed you. By the living God that made you, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din.
Sergeant Ballantyne's eyes glisten. He gazes proudly at the tearful McChesney. Two Indian servants come and pull the sheet over Gunga Dean's peaceful face. As they carry his body away, Mac and Bal stand at attention. The colonel salutes. Kipling removes his cap. As Cutter watches, a tear wells in the corner of his eye. He blinks it away. Later, a column of Scottish bagpipers and drummers parades up a nearby hill and through the camp. More soldiers join the procession as it moves among still blazing bonfires. A ghostly image of Gunga Din appears over the scene, standing at attention in full British military uniform. He salutes us crisply, a bright smile spreads across his face. The image of the grinning soldier fades, and a title appears in bold, brushed ink letters. The End. A logo, RKO Radio Pictures. Credits appear. Cast of characters, Cary Grant as Cutter, Victor McLaughlin as McChesney, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. as Ballantyne, Sam Jaffe as Gunga Din, Eduardo Cianelli as Guru, Joan Fontaine as Emmy, Montague Love as Colonel Weed, Robert Coote as Higginbottom, Abner Bieberman as Chota, Lumsden Hare as Major Mitchell.